Greetings, everybody, and welcome to another installment of Innovation Crush. It's me, Chris Denson, at Densonology on social media. I need to do a better job. I need to be like you on my social medias.
That's a fire handle. I don't know if you don't need any correction on that.
I need to get it out there. I got listeners, but nobody's listening to me. They're listening to the show. About the show, if you guys are tuning in for the first time, this show covers all things innovation, ideas, creativity, smart people doing smart things and wearing dope kicks. I'm here with Pastor Chad Veach.
Thanks for having me on. This is awesome.
Thanks for being here.
This is great.
How are you doing today?
I feel really, really good. I feel like I got good sleep, good coffee this morning. We're ready to go.
Oh, that's all you need. Good sleep and good coffee?
Two things I need in life.
Your energy levels.
Right, right. Boom.
So let's start with a little bit of 101 on Sir Chad Veach. Why don't you, if you don't mind, give me an abbreviated bio of who you are, how you describe yourself to the world.
I'm from Seattle. Grew up there.
By the way, did you get the video I sent you this morning?
No. Oh. What did you send me?
Oh, man. You probably remember this. It was Seattle. Well, you know, Sir Mix-a-Lot.
Yeah.
It was a parody that was a Bible version of I Like Big Bibles That I Cannot Lie.
Oh, I love that.
And it was.
I didn't get it.
It's hilarious.
Oh, I need to watch that. That's really good. I'm from Seattle. Moved to LA when I was 18. Went to Bible college down here. Became a youth pastor when I was 19. Went back up after being here 6 years, went back to Seattle for a while and then came back and started a church. So I've only ever lived in Seattle and LA, and I've been doing this pastoring thing, trying to serve people for almost 2 decades.
Wow.
Yeah.
Where does the twang come from? You got like this little draw. Seattle and LA doesn't.
Yeah. Everyone, when people say, "Where are you from?" And then I say Seattle, they go,
that makes no sense.
Yeah. Well, sixth grade is when The Chronic came out, and I just listened to Snoop Dogg nonstop rap music. So I was really influenced by hip hop rap music. And then when I was, 17, 18, wanted to get into preaching, I love listening to preachers.
Yeah.
So my accent is a combination of my two greatest influences, which is black people and preachers.
All right. So you probably know my dad. He's black and he's a black rapping preacher.
See, that's what I want to be. I want to be a white rapping preacher.
Trust me, you don't want these black problems. no, that's cool. So, LA is an interesting city.
Very.
And what you've built here is pretty awesome. Okay. In terms of the type of how you've tapped into the culture. And I think LA is obviously like a beacon, I guess, an epicenter of culture in a lot of ways, from the creative industry to film and obviously with the work you're doing. What is it about LA that, made it home for you and home for your business and for your following?
Well, again, like I was here for 6 years, and the first 6 years I lived on the east side, and I was a youth pastor in East LA. So I never came. The only thing I did on the west side was like Santa Monica, so I didn't know West Hollywood. I didn't know Beverly Hills. So it wasn't until I started visiting later in life when I grew up that I was like, wow, the epicenter of culture is LA. And so when I came here, that's why I wanted to do a theater or a club, because I felt like in order to reach the ecosystem of this area right now, we're taping this in West Hollywood. This area is a certain type of person, has a certain type of interest, and I wanted to tap into the culture. And the culture to me was almost more important than, the attendance, so to speak. Like, yeah, we want to reach a lot of people, but I really want to tap into LA and serve the city. The thing I always think is about churches is that we need all types of churches to reach all types of people. And I know that for us coming in, I have a certain window of relevancy that I want to, while I have this time, reach the area, reach the city. Yeah. So maybe that won't be there when I'm 50-something or 60-something, but I wanted to do it when I was at this age to try and come in and swing as hard as I could at the culture.
That's great. Because yeah, I mean, speaking of theaters, El Rey is like iconic.
Yeah.
You know, I saw her there.
Wow.
And then I saw you. which is like, you know, you go on Saturday night and then like on Sunday for church. You're like, I was doing something different last night. you know, when I think about the culture that you tapped into, I mean, even we joked a little bit about sneakers earlier, but you got the Virgil Abloh's on. Yeah. And I hate to use the phrase cool, I do think that there's a almost like a generational gap, right, in terms of what people respond to.
Sure.
What is it about you? And I feel like you're very authentic. Like, there's nothing, you show up how you show up. And when I bumped you outside of the pulpit, it's just like, same dude. You know, what is that person that you're trying to reach? Because you said that very specifically.
Yeah, well, I don't know if it's a type of person as much as, like, I love LA. Like, I love going to Dodger Stadium. I love going to the Staples Center. And when I sit in that, I just look around and go, this is what I'm trying to reach. Like, LA. You know, I'm not trying to reach, like, if you go to the Equinox on Sunset Boulevard, like, you can have it. I don't want no part of the hecticness of LA. I want to reach LA.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like Dodger fans and Laker fans. And so, I feel like our job is to be an interpreter. Like, I see myself as an interpreter. So we have a saying in our team that everything about us says everything about us. So from shoes to hoodies to beanies to glasses to rings, whatever it is, everything about us says everything about us. So I feel like all of it needs to be like calculated a little bit, intentional, so we can interpret, only so that we can interpret a timeless truth. So hopefully maybe somebody looks and goes, wow, I can relate to you.
Yeah.
You like fashion, or you like, you know, fill in the blank, or you listen to music I listen to. And that is just a hook or a bait to sell you a greater product, which is truth, God.
Yeah. You know, we're so close to Sin City. So, you know, when I see the lines outside of El Rey, and it just looks like a place you want to be. Like, you know, it's inviting. And I think about, you know, joking earlier, but my dad was a pastor.
Wow.
And, you know, that was the oversized blazer.
What city?
And Detroit.
Wow. Yep.
Yeah, Detroit, born and raised. You know, but that was like the oversized blue blazer with the gold buttons and
the whole khaki
pants, which you still see in a lot of pockets of America, including LA, right?
Yeah, so, of course.
You know, I keep going back to this idea of authenticity.
Yeah.
You know, and how does that resonate with the folks that you're able to tap into?
Yeah. Well, like, here's the deal. It's like, I always think you really can't fake people. You really can't, whether they're a Christian or not. Like, think about this. Every human is intuitive. So they have an intuitive sense, like, this is real or not. And then if they're a Christian, they're double intuition because now they got discernment. So I just think it's hard to fake people.
Yeah.
And, you know, especially in this town where you and I interact with people all the time, where it's like, you have all the right words, but I don't know, man.
Yeah.
Something doesn't add up for me. Or as Randy Jackson's used to say, that's going to be a no for me, dog. It's just like, yeah, the outfit and the words are all smooth and right, but some doesn't, I don't know. I grew up with parents that were very authentic, very genuine, and kind of trained us like, hey, be who you are everywhere you are. You bring value, be yourself, and people will love that.
Yeah. How long have you built a church? It's 2015.
Church is 3 years old now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Happy third birthday.
Thank you.
No.
Yeah, we're 3 years old.
What's the erection date?
August 23rd.
Yeah.
2015 is when we started.
Get you a cupcake or something.
Yeah, maybe.
No, but, you know, building any business, right, is difficult today, right? Especially one that's sort of saturated, sort of has a perception, especially in LA. You joked on the other day, like, manifest as a, like, being like such an LA word.
Jeez. And,
you know, there's so many different like spiritual practices. But I read a quote that you said, which was, Instagram built this church, right?
Yeah.
Talk to me a little bit about that, right? Because I think the invitation has to be a little bit different, and it has to be vast, right? There's Twitter, there's Instagram,
all of it.
You use push pay for, you know, for tithing and offering.
Right,
and like,
right.
You've really tapped into the cultural zeitgeist of behavior.
Yeah. Well, you know, when we started, it was before the algorithm hit on Instagram. So now they police the heck out of you and you can't get your thing to go anywhere. But before the algorithm, we were out here killing it. So the church following was really, really good and really big, and big for our context as a new startup. But I think because of where we are, we're able to do new things. Maybe in the South you couldn't. Maybe, you know, somewhere else in America you weren't able to do it, but we just were like, we're a new church. We're going to use Instagram. We're going to use PushPay for our offerings. We're going to take advantage of the things that speak the language of the people that are around.
Yeah.
Rather than, I always grew up in church growing up, I always felt like it was like the world was out here with technology and life and the church was back here. And we came in going like, why wouldn't we do what everybody's doing?
Right.
It doesn't make sense to me not to capitalize.
That's great. The other thing in a similar direction, I was thinking about Drake. I feel like there's this wave of like emo brand presence, you know, and Drake just happens to be the vision I have in my head for it. But it's just like, remember that time we was in the drive-thru and I gave you $5?
Yeah,
it's like he tells these very personal stories.
Right.
And you find that, like I find it happening in stand-up comedy where you see somebody like dealing with depression on stage, you know.
Sure.
And there's a vulnerability to you, and maybe not to that degree, but I think like the other day you told a story about being in traffic and you were listening to worship music and then somebody cut you off and suddenly you became Chad Beach, not Pastor Chad Beach.
Yeah, very quickly.
But is that by design, like the vulnerability that like, because I think a lot of pastors, you know, sit up here.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
And then when something goes wrong, they're caught off guard. But what's that vulnerability piece?
Well, I think probably one of the most important things is like when you're preaching, answer a question somebody's asking and meet a felt need. So it's like, I need this. Maybe people can't even identify that. But I'm always thinking on Sunday, how can I answer a question maybe you thought about, you know, and then how do I meet a felt need in your life? I can't do either one of those things without being authentic. I can't do either one of those things without breaking down your mental barrier of I'm over here and you're over there. But when I can be vulnerable, we're in the same, you and I just related.
Yeah.
Because you can go, oh, I do that.
Yeah.
Oh, I struggle with that. Oh, you feel that way. Okay, well then now I'm really invested, or now I'll really listen to you because you relate to my world. If the preacher can't relate to your world, you don't understand what I'm going through.
Yeah.
You don't know my pain. So I'm just trying to let people know, like, hey, I have the same issues. I struggle with the same things. We're all on a faith journey. So just because I have a mic doesn't make me better or perfect.
Right. That's great. And I guess, how did that develop in you over time? I mean, I know you were educated. I know it was part of your family. It's part of your wife's family.
Yeah.
But sometimes the chronic and in church at the El Rey don't quite add up.
Yeah.
So what was your own journey to get here?
Well, it is a journey. You know, I think I heard someone say it takes 6 years for somebody to find their own voice.
Chronic was a great album, by the way.
Chronic was one of the best rap albums of all time.
Absolutely.
I think it was a revolutionary album.
Absolutely.
In hip hop music, to be honest. But I mean, it gave us Snoop, right?
Yeah.
And look what it did for Dre. But I heard this guy, John Maxwell, say it takes someone 6 years to find their voice. And you're often an echo before you're a megaphone, meaning you're kind of you're a collection of your influences until you develop your own kind of rhythm and your own authority and your own authenticity. Yeah. So I think, you know, thank God I had years preaching to young people and preaching to youth. So now when I stand up, I'm not trying to be anybody but me. And so it took a while to work that out. And I heard someone say a long time ago, people will admire your strengths, but they relate with your weaknesses.
Mm.
So they might go, wow, you're funny, or wow, you're, you know, that makes sense, or you memorize that scripture. They admire your strengths, but they relate with, oh, you cuss in the freeway too?
Yeah.
They relate to your weaknesses. So just trying to, you know, do everything I can. You know, I always think preaching is like boxing. When I get up there and I start kind of slow, how you feeling, blah, 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 just kind of doing this, dancing around. But at the end of the thing, I'm going to throw jabs, hooks, lefts, right. I'm going to throw. And when I walk off the stage, my goal is I beat you. You didn't beat me. Mm. I, the word came through to you and God touched your life. And when I walk, so I just see it as boxing.
Right.
I'm going to throw everything I got, every move and every trick I got, only so you can understand the message today.
When you say I beat you, you didn't beat me. I don't know, it's an exaggeration. But and I'm sure it's like any good stand-up comic, right?
You bombed a couple of times.
Yeah.
I've walked off where I'm like, dang, they won. The crowd killed me. You know, the 11, I killed them. 12:45 was great. 6 o'clock, that was a rough one right there. So yeah, the crowd has its own personality, has its own, you know, vibe, and you're just trying to throw out stuff to see what lands.
Yeah.
You know, I listened to what's the guy's name that stars in Breaking Bad?
Well, I was about to say Walter White. Bryan Cranston.
Right. He's got this new one with Kevin Hart. And he was I heard him on the radio talking the other day. He said, they said, did you ever do comedy? He said, yeah. He goes, I did comedy until. He said, one night I was telling jokes in this club, and he goes, I'm killing. I mastered it. So I leave and I call. What's the name of the hot place here in L.A.?
Laugh Factory.
I'm coming. Get me a mic. Get me a spot. I figured this thing out. Blah, blah, blah. So he drives across L.A., gets this place. Same jokes that just killed. Crickets. And he's like, wait a second. I just murdered this place. And now I'm getting murdered. Same content, same delivery. How come? And preaching is the same. I could do the same message at 9:15, drive to the valley trying the same stuff, and it's like, okay.
Crickets?
Yeah. So that's what I mean, more like boxing. Like, you got to really know your crowd and know your audience and know when to pull it back or when to, you know, just read it.
Speaking of reading, did you read my book?
I need to. I've got a pile of.
It's not a shameless plug. I did stand up for 7 years.
Yeah,
and the first chapter actually compares innovation to stand up, and
so
like
smart.
How you're on this solo journey. You're out there delivering a message to people. You're trying to invite them into the journey, and whether it's financial support, you know, a marketing partnership, whatever, you know, technology development, all those things. And you know, there becomes a skill of communication and reading and everything you just said. And I think the same thing happens in business, you know, and on that side of things, when you are building a church, yes, you're getting people through the doors, but you also have a lot of work to do on the business side. Tell us a little bit about that side of, you know,
that was the real learning curve, right? Cause I had done youth for so long and been on staff, but you know, what kind of budget do I see? What kind of insurance policy am I running? HR is just where I get my vacation approved. So the business side was a real learning curve. It was a real, and still to this day, what I enjoy. I just got out of a meeting right now. We're talking about our budget, and thank God I have my wife who is very business savvy, and that's her gift. So details and administration, but I enjoy that part. I enjoy the business side. Like all things, church is a business.
Yeah.
And so you got to run it effectively. You got to run it, you know, for if you want to have property down the road, you want to hire more staff, you want to continue to, you know, have capital improvements and so on and so forth. So I enjoy that part of it. There is the Sunday preaching, team leading, volunteer side that you got to get good at. But I think any great church has really sharp business people leading it on the forefront.
Yeah. And how did you structure your team around yourself? Because, you know, like you said, getting up there every Sunday and you travel a lot and, you know, you are a face, right, of this community and many around the country and around the world. You can't be there to run the business all the time. So, you know, what steps did you take to sort of build the right, especially in a religious environment,
right?
You have to hire the, like, you got to be very, I'm extrapolating, yeah, but no, you have to be very particular.
Very. Yeah. You know, the people we've hired have been people that have been with us really since the beginning, you know, and they have so much sweat equity in the company and so much sacrifice. And a lot of them moved from out of state to come, you know, work side jobs and volunteer like crazy. And so there's that trust factor. And then you just look at the competent. I always look at character, competency, capacity, and chemistry are big for when we're hiring.
Right.
You know, do they add chemistry to our organization? Do they have character that's trustworthy? What kind of capacity do they have? And then also, what is their competence? Are they competent? So,
and are they praying with one eye open when you?
That's it, right? That's why. That's kind of like what I
looking around the room.
You look around the room. Everybody good? But yeah, we've hired people that are really sharp and really good. And you know, I was talking this morning to our college. I always think great leaders staff their weakness. Mm. So I got to continue to invest into my strengths. But my weakness is I need some people on staff that are crushing where I could never fill that gap.
Yeah.
You know, so you come in and crush this area because this is what you're good at naturally.
Yeah.
This is your grace. So we've hired some great people that obviously are completely crushing it.
That's amazing. So I'm standing there with my daughter and in one of the services, and she's like, oh, it's Justin Bieber.
Yeah.
Like down, because you know, I sit in the back.
Yeah.
Just in case something goes down.
Yeah.
No. And I'm like, no, it's not. And we got this like a silent argument while, you know, at church. And so, of course, it was him. And, you know, and you've also got relationships with Chris Pratt and, you know, some other celebrities. And I was thinking this morning in the shower, I was like, I don't remember hearing, like, Steve Harvey is in church. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the celebrities I grew up with. I didn't hear about them. Not that I would have expected Steve Harvey in church.
Right.
With his flat top. Yeah. But it's flat top Steve Harvey, not
you
bald
ever hear
Steve
the
Harvey.
Steve Harvey where he introduces Jesus?
No. What?
YouTube this or Google this. Steve Harvey, it's one of the best videos you'll ever see. I mean, I wish I could get him to come do it at our church. He introduced, like, you know how boxers get introduced?
Yeah.
Steve Harvey does an introduction of it's unbelievable.
That is hilarious.
You got to look it up.
The last Steve Harvey video I saw was, he was like, this is how black people get fired, and this is how white people get fired.
Yeah.
And I was like, not your best work, Steve. I don't even know how, like, it just popped up on YouTube. I wasn't even looking for it. My point being, Chad, now, like, how... I don't know. What is the cult? Because it pops up in tabloids.
Yeah.
Carl Lentz, same, you know, Rich Wilkinson Jr. Like, there's this kind of like, quote unquote, cool celebrity-ish, you know, tied into that community. What does that do? I'm going to call it the brand. What does it do for the brand of the church? And granted, there's the mission. And maybe those two are tied together.
Right.
Or maybe it's just happenstance. I don't know. But
yeah. What does it do for the brand? You mean like... How does it hurt it and how does it help it?
Yeah, because I can imagine some people go like, oh,
exactly.
That's what that church is. You know what I mean?
Because when you say that, that's the first word that comes to mind is the word polarize. Mm. And, you know, Jesus, right? Jesus is hanging out with guys that are famous and it's polarizing. And people go, why are you hanging out with them? Mm-hmm. You know, so probably there's some people that's like, man, thank you that you're hanging out with them. And there's other people that are like, why are you hanging out with them? So I just think celebrities by nature are polarizing in America and even in the world because that's what fame does, right? Fame, when you're famous, some people adore you and some people don't.
Right.
And that's just polarizing. So I think you know, not that anybody's trying to be that. I think you're polarizing. Anyone that becomes successful, anyone that becomes known is polarizing by nature because you can't win everybody over. So, yeah, you know, people come to church that have a following or are recognized or are known. But I think we just, to the best of our ability, our value is we want everyone to have a clear shot at Jesus. Mm-hmm. So we're not going to make a big deal. We're not going to go, hey, you know what? It's great to have in the front row Steve Harvey on. I grew up to that. In fact, I just took somebody with me to a really big church recently, out of town traveling. This person was like, let's take my jet. I was like, okay. So
yeah, go, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Because my ticket was booked in economy right, on American Airlines. Exactly. Yeah, yeah, right. So we go, and the pastor is a big church, so I think he's cool. He gets it. He knows. I'm sure he's been around this. Before I preach, he gets up. You know, it's great to have in the front row, and introduces my guests. And I'm just hanging my head like, bro, I trusted you.
Yeah.
Like, I brought this person thinking you knew what was good and how we roll. And my guest is just kind of like, is he doing this right now? So then afterward, people from the church are trying to take photos and their security's not stopping. And I'm just like, wow, in LA, we have created a culture where it's like you wouldn't know unless you kind of like really look for it.
Right.
But we're never going to parade it or announce it because people should be protected.
Yeah.
You know, and everyone should have a free,
that's everyone.
Free like, shot. Everyone.
Yeah.
That's exactly. Everyone should be protected. So I think the more people feel safe, the more that they will come.
Yeah.
You know.
So Kanye said, next time I'm in church, please no photos.
That's it.
The other thing, you were kind of touching on this earlier, is like that vulnerability that I used to refer to it as a Me Too moment, but now I can't do that anymore because Me Too, you'd be like, oh, me, I experienced that too. But now people put a hashtag in front of something.
You ain't going to do that no more.
Changes complete meaning.
Changes everything.
But, you know, I think, especially as a parent, I guess, but I think seeing a celebrity in church, especially someone like that.
Yeah.
To me, just validates a different thing that we see in pop culture. Right. It's we see all the, I'll call it destruction porn, right? Like, it's
Yeah.
Oh, look at, he peed in the bucket or whatever. There's
other fill in the blank.
My daughter did a, just talking to the principal today. She did a, she gave a speech on the Kardashians, an argumentative speech.
Wow.
And it was for them.
That's awesome.
Right. And like got an A on it. I was talking to the principal today and she was like, oh, I heard about that. Like, was excited about it because it was so apparently well done. But, you know, I think that democratizes the playing field when, you know, having those people there, especially you've created the safe space.
Right.
It's like the celebrities are just like us. Right.
Right.
I didn't have a question. I just was.
No, that's great.
Trying to sound smart.
You did sound great. That's awesome. And I wish I could have heard that speech.
I'll bring her back so you can please do it in front of you.
I would love to hear it.
She'll kill me. So church merch.
Yeah.
You changed the game.
I didn't. Some other boys changed the game, but yes.
But yes. Under your watch. Tell us about this because you've done a couple of pop-ups. I think speaking of Kardashians, the guy that did Kylie Jenner's pop-up kind of put yours together. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, and we're getting ready to do another one in a couple months. Yeah, I think
I'm gonna get there early this time because last time I heard it
was it goes crazy.
I think it was like one sock lift.
Well, I just, again, like, if everybody out there is doing pop-ups, why can't we do a pop-up? Mm-hmm. So I just started watching. Like, I was around the Weekend Boys, and they're like, we're doing a pop-up, and then Kylie's doing a pop-up, and blah, blah. And I'm just like, look, we have a couple thousand people that call this place home, and social media on top of that, we can do a pop-up. And by the way, guess what merch is for the church? It's a fundraiser. So growing up, I grew up in church. We did car washes. We did bake sales. We did lock-ins. We did walks. But church merch supplements our income. Church merch brings in a lot of money into the church so we can do capital improvements. So I'm like, wow, this is free marketing because people are wearing your stuff and they love, and they don't even realize this, but this is helping us buy a projector, or this is helping us buy equipment we need. So I'm like, this is a no-brainer. We're going to do it and crush it and make stuff that people want to wear. And so these boys, you know, I always think, there's a saying we say all the time, and I'm 100% convinced of this, that the miracle is in the house. That saying means I don't need to go outside and look for people to help me. Mm. Everything I need is in our church.
That's an interesting point, because I think, you know, I've talked to a lot of innovators and I mentor, you know, startups and different programs, but I find that most of us overlook the resources that are right in front of us. myself included. I'm like, oh, we need to look. Like, I'm looking all across this, you know, the city or the country, and I'm like, oh, it was right here the whole time.
Listen, the moment we activate this thing, the guy that does Kylie's, I didn't know he did Kylie's. He came out the woodwork. But Jerry Meng, who has a warehouse and would fulfill distribution for 27 artists. I mean, the biggest of the. I mean. This guy is both manufacturing and doing distribution for some of the biggest artists in the world. He's in our church. So there's our shipping and a lot of our manufacturing. A guy named Derek Chestnut has his own merch company called LA Merch. So everything I need is right here. Then I got a quarterback in the office next door to us right now. And it's like, and a designer that's in our church. So it's like, pull the crew together. What are we going to do? So we create a deck that's like, this stuff is heat. Go make it. And the rest is history. And we just kept doing it. But as far as GQ picking it up and Fashionista picking it up and all of that comes from coincidentally, people with a following wearing it and it getting picked up. But we were never going for that.
Right.
It wasn't like, dude, let's hope GQ picks it up. It's like,
well, I've had this conversation a lot recently about the magic that happens when you're aligned.
Yeah, that's it.
Right. And I think in I have a, you know, a fairly business focused audience, but I don't think you can ignore the magic that happens when you are just aligned. Talk to me about your theory on that. I just gave it to you.
But, yeah. Have you seen either of the Fyre Festival docs yet?
I was just talking about it. I watched the trailer for the one on Netflix.
I watched the Netflix one last night.
Yeah.
And I might start a Hulu account just so I can watch the other one. Hulu's smart, but for this one, because they're gonna, I think, get a lot of accounts because of it. But anyway, like myself. But anyways.
Shout out to Ja Rule.
Yeah, shout out to Ja Rule, who went to Hillsong Church for a while. But
alignment. He wasn't on the vocal team, was he?
No, I don't think so. Could you imagine?
Lord!
Yeah. Bless the Lord. Oh, my soul. But, you know, I'm working on my third book right now. And the third book that I'm working on really has to do with, you ever read that book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, mm-hmm. by Dale Carnegie? It's a timeless, right? So this book is really dedicated to how do you be good with people. It's three sections. It's how to win with yourself, how to win with others, and how to win with the team, the family, or the business, the organization. So those are the three steps of it. So I'm really excited. But with the people part, one of the main focuses of one of the chapters we're fleshing out right now is that your alignment determines your assignment. Mm. So, you know, like Jim Collins would say, the book Good to Great, he would say, it doesn't matter where the bus is going. It really doesn't. All that matters is who's on the bus, because who you align yourself with is everything in life. So I have found myself in places I should not be, and knowing people I should not know, and all of it I can go back to. It's just because 5-6 years ago, I was like, I'm hitching my wagon to that.
Yeah.
That's going to be my guy. I'm going to be committed to that relationship. And the making those right decisions has changed the trajectory of my whole life. I didn't get smarter. It's just people.
Yeah.
So I think with that is tricky, though, because people will sometimes try to align themselves to you so they can use you.
Right.
And I don't think we can ever do that. I think we got to align ourselves to people that we're like, I'm supposed to do life with this person. They're supposed to be in my life. I'm supposed to be in their life. And it's mutual.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's fair to be one-sided. No relationship can ever flourish. It's just one-sided, where one's a taker and the other one's a giver. That will never work. So relationship weren't designed that way. So. But all that to say is, like, I just made some decisions 10 years ago, 7 years ago, 5 years ago, 3 years ago that changed the trajectory of my life.
Yeah. And I think about that, those types of journeys and, you know, the serendipity that happens. Like I said, GQ picked it up just because you wanted to raise funds, right? Like, it's
crazy.
It's such a leap from, like, the initial thought. And so I think about, like, the idea of goals. You know, you walk into most churches in America, there's a building fund, right? Or there's there's something going on that's like a 5-10 year goal. But then in the middle of that, there's these opportunistic opportunities. You know, from a faith perspective and or from a business perspective, how do you balance out like setting a goal and then being opportunistic while you're on that path?
Yeah.
Because there's going to be always something like a new thing that pops up.
Sure.
You're like, oh, we could do that, but is that going to derail or is it going to add to or, you know, or.
This is the constant thing that every business deals with, right? You know, so this morning I was in a meeting about our immediate goals versus our long-term goals. And also, you know, we're having to make a decision about office space. And I signed here's a great example. I signed a 3-year lease. I'm halfway through my lease. Is this office hurting and stunting my growth? And am I so married to my deposit, which I can't get back? Mm-hmm. Am I willing to forsake and leave that money on the table to go to a bigger space with 4 times the space to grow our college and grow our staff and also absorb some of the money I have to use to rent other facilities where I can get that all in one spot? So I think there's always the realities of that, of going like, what's our immediate goals versus what's our long-term goals and what's popping up right now that if I, you know, again, spend money on capital improvements, it's going to help us in the long term grow even more.
Yeah.
So we're always having to make those decisions. I just don't make them alone.
You know, like, you guys deal with it. I'll be back.
Yeah. Or my wife is so good and our team is so good. But I think, we're always looking at, I think the obsession for every organization has to be improvement though.
Yeah.
Like we're not done. We're not settling. I say to our staff, you know, as much as possible, just so they get it in their passion of their heart that like, hey, nothing's personal. We just are obsessed with improvement.
Yeah.
So every Monday by noon, our whole staff emails in on Basecamp. Excuse me, a SWOT. What SWOT is? Yeah, strengths, weaknesses. So
opportunities and threats.
And so we do a SWOT every week. And where do I land? Strengths, cool. I was there. I saw it too.
Mm-hmm.
Opportunities, I know the calendar too. That's cool. But I'm camping out on weaknesses and threats because that's all I really care about. Where are we weak? So I'm going to turn that into a strength.
Yep.
And what's threatening the growth of this organization?
Can you give an example of either of those two things?
Well, yeah. Weaknesses, communication between locations. Weaknesses in the 11 a.m., 2 weeks in a row, our video crash. That's a big threat to our equity and the trust of our organization. Weaknesses would be some staff that's been with us since the beginning, making the jump to be where we're at now and where we're going. Weaknesses would be like the men's bathroom on Sunday. It got untidy and the environments team didn't take care of it in time.
Oh, that was me.
Whoopsies. But you know what I mean? Like, I'm trying to find that.
Yeah.
You know, like a weakness. Our Wednesday at our prayer meeting, it rained so hard that our vests for our parking lot team got drenched.
Mm.
No one thought to get them dried. So on Sunday, we parked, you know, everybody that came without the vests. Just like an eyesore to me.
Right. So, I guess that leads me to think about like what kind of leader are you? Because in the organizational sense, because I worked in property management for a while, and we would do the white glove, like run your fingers along the countertop. If I'm showing this apartment, it better be pristine, like, you know what I mean? And because everything is an echo of your brand, right? Or the customer experience.
That's it.
Down to the bathroom, to the vests too. So, you know, what kind of leader is Chad Veach inside the organization?
Oh gosh. I mean, I think I can fall into micromanager, you know, because I'm obsessed with the details and maybe I get a little bit fearful of the brand. You know, like that parking lot deal is a big deal to me.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's what makes us great, but maybe that's what makes us weak, that I'm still in the details of that. So I find myself being obsessive with the details of the organization, from creativity to operations to Zoe Kids. All of it matters. All of it is tied together. So I hopefully I'm the type of leader that is just very on top of everything.
Mm-hmm.
That's my goal.
Good job. So switching gears a little bit to family, you mentioned your wife, you have a bundle of children.
Too many.
There's a whole. It's a gaggle. What's the scientific number?
I don't know. It's a lot.
Yeah. But you know, your Georgia, your first child, yes, was born with some difficulties.
Yeah.
Or later developed some difficulties shortly after.
Yeah.
If you don't mind, tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah.
And because I think it's a great story, because I think any of us would have. I don't know. It would have been a gigantic challenge.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm sure it was, but you know.
Yeah, well, she was born with it. We just didn't discover till she was 4 months. But her brain just never developed. Her brain never developed the folds that all of our brains have, which is, you know, how we would process everything, all information. So she can't talk or, you know, control her limbs or walk, or she can't do anything, to be honest. She can't even eat. There's nothing in her brain that would tell her how to swallow. Mm. So she gets all of her feeding through a tube. So yeah, I mean, that was a real testing. That was a real, it still is, a moment. But again, I think I'm thankful for that process and that experience, because it teaches you how to relate with people, teaches you compassion. It teaches you that, you know, life, we're all kind of one day away from life being very different. So yeah, you know, she in herself, her own right, is a miracle and has defied the doctors. She's way further along than we thought. Still can't walk, still can't talk, still can't, you know, do much of anything, but is happy for the most part, and struggles with seizures, but sometimes they're on, sometimes they're off. So she's our own special, you know, blessing that we have. We have this girl that is really never said a word, but has taught me so much about life. And so we're really thankful. We wouldn't wish it on anybody, but we wouldn't trade it for anything in the world.
What, without communication that you're used to, that we're all used to, what have you learned about connection?
There you go. That's the word. I connect with that girl all the time, right? She can't say anything, but, you know, I'll come around and say, Georgia, how you doing? And she start kicking her leg, lighting up and saying, you know, some sounds, making sounds. And she's telling you, hi, Dad, how you doing? I'm so happy you're home. She can't say that, but she's we're connecting. So there is that connection with her. It's really beautiful.
Do you, because you're the guy, like, every time I see you, there's like a wide Cheshire cat grin. It's like, hey, dude's still smiling. He's still smiling. Do you carry what you've learned from that, you know, from your relationship with Georgia out into the world?
Hopefully, right. And so what do you learn? Like, it's really cool because, you know, I was in Hawaii preaching maybe last year. This family that doesn't believe in God and go to church.
Keep bragging, why don't you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, fine, I'll go. God, I'll, if that's where you want me. But this family came to church and came to hear me because they know George's story, and they don't believe in God, they don't go to church, but they read the book. And so they showed up and they wanted me to meet their daughter that has the same diagnosis. So it's helped us relate to people and have an audience that I would, you know, like, I think Unreasonable Hope, the book did, like, was so big in special needs on Amazon for so long that I never would have had a voice in the special needs community before. So it's, you know, hopefully changed us to the better. Wherever we go, we're carrying pain and the relatability of it, but the victory. Like, you go through pain and you don't have to, it's not about what's happened to you. It's about how you recover from what's happened to you.
Are all your kids named after states?
Just Georgia. I got Georgia. I got Winston. I got Maverick, and I got Clivey.
Oh, this is a very millennial named bunch of kids.
Yeah, my wife named all of them. I can't take credit for any of them.
You take some credit. No, that's I love that story, because I think and it, especially because you decided to have more. What I was going to ask you is, how close to the start of Zoe was Georgia?
Yeah, so we moved down here when she was turning three, and my son was turning one. So, and we had to go through tests to make sure this wouldn't happen again.
Right.
Like, we had to go through a bunch of tests to go, like, hey, if you have another kid, will this take place every time. So we passed, it was just a fluke incident, fluke thing. But yeah, when we moved to LA, she was turning 3 and my son was turning 1.
Speaking of ages, better at 70. So, tell me about that.
I think I got the bracelet on today too. We turned it into a bracelet. So good. I need to get you one of these better. So I got it on my wrist and I got it on my bracelet. It's the same thing that's on here. It was pretty cool. We're in Sweden and Justin had a few shows there. It was before he bowed out of the whole thing and said, I'm done. And so he goes, I forget where we were. He's like, let's get a tattoo artist. Let's get tattoos. We'll all get this better at 70. So we're all hyped. There's 3 other guys with us. So we're all hyped. Yeah, let's do it. So Justin goes first, gets this big old better at 70 on his leg. And then my boy Judah goes and he gets big old. And then Josh, who's kind of his handler. And then I look and I was like, nah, man. I go, hey, Justin, write it real small. I'm going to put mine on my wrist. He goes, that's a great idea. So he writes it. This is, you know, his handwriting right here. And then my boy Judah goes, wait a second. I could have gotten it small like that on my wrist. And I was like, dude, I told you that's too big. So he's got this big old on his leg, better 70. I got the little dainty, cute. Ain't nobody can see it.
It's very straight out of Compton font.
Yeah.
Who knew Justin wrote like that? What does it mean?
So all of it really came from my friend Judah, and we started talking about pastors get weird when they're older, like really weird. And maybe like in my age, I'm 39, crushing. Like they all had their run, mm-hmm. built their buildings, built their churches. Then in their 50s, 60s, they get weird because you lose your relevancy,
yeah.
lose your influence. And we knew this one guy that we felt like was one of the few that as he aged got better. Mm. So he's 70.
Like Patrick Stewart.
Right? There you go. As 70, all of his kids want to be around him. He's secure. He's confident. He still has influence. And we were like, we want to be like that guy.
Yeah.
So it became a value that's like, hey, let's get better every year. Kinder, sweeter, more genuine. Let's just like wine, get better with age. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a reminder like, hey, we're going to be better at 70 than we are right now.
Yeah. It's a great like beacon to have. What's the ultimate goal, right? Like you want to, and that couples with another thought I was having, like how churches are sort of territorial, and not territorial like they're fighting for space, but more not like the Bloods and Crips, but more like Hillsong's downtown, right? And you have this space and the valley, and I think there's when you think about growth. You don't want to encroach, I would imagine. You don't want to encroach on other, you know, church territories. It's like the streets. It's like, hey, homie.
Hey,
what church you from? But what is the growth goal? Oh, sorry, it's a very roundabout way of asking a simple question. Yeah. What's the growth goal? What's next?
Yeah, well, I would love to have them all over the city. You know, I think. How could you reach a city of millions and millions of people without having locations all over the city? Right. So I want to be in Malibu. I want to be on the east side. I would love to be in Pasadena one day. I'd love to be in South Bay. I'd love to crush a Culver City location. So I think we'll just keep on popping them up all over the place.
Yeah.
And of course, out of respect to our friends, I don't want to be like next door. You know, that's not cool.
Right.
But like one church is one turn and 3 lights away, 4 lights away, and they're crushing. And we're LA has space for it.
Mm-hmm.
I was just thinking, look, there's more people outside of church than in, so we got to do as everything we can to reach as many people. So I don't know. I think, you know, of course, out of respect and relationship, you don't want to be too close to people, but I think LA is big enough to where we can go all over the place and still reach a lot of people.
What does conversion feel like? Because every Sunday, it's, you know, there's an invitation,
yeah,
for people to deepen their faith, and I think, and the same thing in business is like, you're looking for more people to use your product, right? And you have the best product of all, right?
Sure, the best.
but I think about that, right? It's as you grow and the implications of what that means. And yeah. I think if you make a meaningful product, insert startup or company X here, there's a high you get from somebody saying yes to you and yes to your mission and yes to the product that you have in store. Like, what does that feel like on a weekly basis?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it feels really, really good when, we would measure a few things, whatever you measure and celebrate is what matters to you. So we measure a number, our organization would measure probably 7 to 8 things that are big to us. Mm-hmm. So what's a big deal? People that raise their hand and say, yes, we measure that. We celebrate it. How many people show up to our locations and services? We measure it. We celebrate it. How many people go through Go Track, which would be like our training on what we're about, our vision, our values, our standards, and our mission. Mm-hmm. We measure it. We celebrate it. Connect groups. We have 500-600 people meeting in small groups. We measure it. Our giving, I always think people are about 4 months behind their giving. So they might come, but they're going to check you out and see, are you still smiling? You still genuine? Mm-hmm. Is this really real? They're about 4 months behind. They're going to give something in the plate. So, but we measure it. We celebrate it. So I think there's a number of things in church that you kind of follow and measure to see what really is conversion. Because just because somebody came to your building doesn't mean they converted.
Yeah, yeah. That's great. It's. I went to Michigan State and I had a chance to interview the coach after they won the 100th Rose Bowl.
Wow.
The title of the episode is Celebrate Every Win. And you just said that. It's like, we all get to practice on time, we're celebrating. You know, Joey got a, there's no football player named Joey. Malik, good numbers. No.
Joey is at the end of the bench waving his towel.
Exactly. No, I really went down because I was reading the roster of names to him. I was like, where did these names come from?
That's so awesome.
But that was their thing. And so that year that they decided to celebrate every win, no matter how small, it meant they won the Rose Bowl. Like, you know what I mean? So
wow.
I love the fact that there it's a constant celebration.
Yeah. Always has to be, because in church is funky that way. How can you know if someone really consumes your product?
Yeah,
the way that
data points are very different,
very very different. So I know someone's really consuming the product when they attend, they're giving, they're a part of all the systems we've created. Not everybody can live up to that standard. Or think about that, how much time that is. Mm. Look at your life. You're busy, you're going, you're moving. You got all kinds of stuff going on. Can you check every box? No way. So why would we force somebody to do 5 things? Mm. We got to celebrate everything is a win.
Yeah.
The
show is called Innovation Crush.
Yeah, I love it.
Thank you.
Say your handle again. I got to follow that.
Densonology.
That is fire.
Densonology.
Densonology.
It's the study of oneself. It represents this. I'm trying to make it deeper than it is. I had Densonator at first.
No, that's not going to work.
I know. That was like my
Densonology's
chat room name.
Yeah, that's a little 99 for me. 1999. This one's going to work.
Hey, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate the vote of confidence. So as you go about your days, you meet a lot of people, obviously you're well resourced with people who walk in your doors. What do you see out in the world that you're personally crushing on? Like what's something that's out there? It could be technology. It could be a meal you had
that I
love. I'm sorry. You haven't had a meal in a few.
I'm on this fast right now. I'm hungry. Thanks for bringing up my Lara bar. What am I into right now? Like crushing right now?
Yeah.
Well, the Fire Festival. I go back to that. I'm so into it, and I can have it on the fast right now. Is Backyard Bowls, baby.
Yeah.
I can't get over how good it is. I'm going to go have one later, probably.
Oh, I read that. You,
Backyard
like, if you ever want to have acai bowl with Chad Beach.
Backyard Bowl. You never been?
No.
Right here off Beverly. Beverly and I can't remember the cross, but it goes Blue Bottle and Backyard Bowls are together. They're right next door.
Yeah.
You go in there, you're going to get a Power Bowl. sugar-free acai. You don't need all that sugar. Sugar-free acai, house-made granola, power, gonna change. Revival is gonna slap you upside your head.
That's funny. I'm from Detroit, and I was on a phone call with some folks, and I had ordered an acai bowl before we were on the, and I was calling to some people in Detroit. And for some reason, I was so mad at myself that these words left my lips. But I was like, oh, man, my acai bowl is melting. And I was like, I'm sorry. That was
you're not going to relate to that at all.
The least Detroit statement I've ever made in my life.
Yeah. Detroit just disowned you. Yeah,
exactly. Last but not least, as you think about building and reimagining and all these things, complete this phrase for me. Innovation to me is...
Innovation to me is copying what other people have done. God gave you eyes, plagiarize. Just try and adjust and make it a little bit better or a little bit more personal. So innovation, I always think that, you know, like for me to be innovative, come on, like let's take Steph Curry. Mm-hmm. How long have people been shooting the basketball for? How long have people been shooting three-pointers for?
Mm-hmm.
The crossover dribble, are you kidding me? You know, like, but somehow he made it a little personal to him.
Mm.
And that's why he's changed the game and influenced the game, is that he took it outside the box a little bit. So it's like church. People been preaching the message and singing songs on Sundays forever. Right?
For quite some time.
For quite some time. How do you make it innovative? You got to take what they've done and do a little personal touch.
Mm.
A little bit more different, a little bit more unique to how you see the world.
Yeah.
And so that's innovation to me. It's taking what other people have done and doing it a little bit more personal.
I like that. And I think it goes, it's very much in line with what you said. You alluded to this, is like finding your own voice.
That's it.
And there was something, another thing.
You're an echo before you're a megaphone.
Right. Yeah. Thank you. That's it.
Yeah.
Your dad also made a comment about that. What happens in your 40s, like where you start to like, oh, now you know very succinctly who you are.
That's it.
And you can walk in that. Because I think we do see those things. And I think I went through this myself. It's like you're afraid to be all that you are, in a sense, where, you know, it's like, you know, maybe you didn't want to be silly up, you know, on the, because you're, you know, you crack jokes, hit or miss. Like,
hit or miss.
You just let them fly. Yeah. A lot of misses, but no.
Tons of misses.
No.
An insane amount of misses.
But I, like, you know, there's, I'm sure there was a period of time where you're like, maybe, should I do that?
Sure.
Should I not? But then you're like, you know what?
It is what it is.
Exactly.
I think the older I get, the more I'm like, I'd rather be polarizing that way. Again, using the word polarizing.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather someone come into our church and go, dang, I love the way that guy preaches, and have somebody walk out and go, that's the stupidest. I hated his delivery.
Mm-hmm.
Why does he yell? Why does he feel like he needs to tell jokes? I'd rather be polarizing that way than stay in the middle and try and please everybody.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's a good thing when people are like, I hated that guy's preaching. Good, because there's some people out there that's like, I love that.
Right. You got to piss some people off.
You have to.
That'll be the title of this episode.
Yeah.
Pissing people off. Episode number 206.
Pissing people off with a pass.
Exactly. There you go. It's a spiral newspaper at the screen. All right. So where can people, what's your handles?
Oh, I'm so boring. I'm such a pastor that way.
What, 300,000-400,000?
I don't know.
Instagram followers?
I had for a long time my name, Chad, with an underscore Veach.
Yes.
And I was like, this is not going to work. So then I added my middle initial, C. My middle name's Charles, so I am Chad C. Veach.
Is Chad Charles? Oof.
It's rough.
It doesn't roll off the tongue.
No, that's why I just do the C.
I'm John Christopher. It's definitely not like black. People are like, oh, you're John Christopher? Oh, okay.
Oh.
But I'll always know when the bill collectors are calling, because they're like, hello, may I speak to John, please? I'm like, no. He's indisposed. So
that's so awesome.
Where else can people go to find out more about you? And
Church LA is our Instagram, Zoe Church LA, and zoechurch.org.
And by the way, I admitted this to Quentin earlier. I only did part of the fast.
Good. The long you did some?
I did. I mean, I'm still doing it, but yeah. I was like, let me just not do meat.
Yeah.
And alcohol.
There you go. That's good.
Yeah.
So I'm getting weak on the wine. At night, I'm like, I'm ready for my nightcap.
Oh, me too. I went in the refrigerator the other day. I was like, you know, kids were going crazy.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, a
couple more weeks. All right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I feel like, so day 16, I think we're through the tough part's over.
Yep.
I'm on countdown. We're 4 days away. We're breaking it Sunday night. I got this.
I think he's optimistic. Everyone, this has been another installment of Innovation Crush. Thank you, Chad, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And we will talk to you next time.